Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 568.
Good news, everyone.
What?
You just went right into Farnsworth there at the beginning. I liked it.
Well, that or the mayor of Townsville.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
What are the Powerpuff Girls?
How's your week been?
It's been real good. We just had the Futurama edition of Stonecutters on Saturday. We had all them the Futurama creators over at Meltdown for a big screening.
That's fantastic.
So much fun.
I was in so many different cities. With the Oddball Festival, I woke up Sunday morning in Salt Lake City, went to Denver and did Red Rocks, which was amazing, and then flew home to LA that night. So it was a crazy day. Now we're back at work today.
That Red Rocks thing's insane.
It's pretty insane.
So cool.
Yeah. Doing podcasts today. We're back on At Midnight. Tenacious D's on At Midnight this week.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be fun. They're on tomorrow night, I think. Today's the 8th of September. They'll be on the 9th tomorrow night.
Look at that.
Got the Sklaris tonight and Brandon Johnson. So
Brandon Johnson.
And then this weekend there's two more weekends of Oddball. I'm not doing the Texas dates, but I'm doing Mountain View at the Shoreline, and then I'm doing Irvine.
You guys ever had a problem with people, like, just lots of beach balls going around while you're trying to
tell
jokes?
Not one beach ball during a comedy
show.
That's
got to be at least a little, like, disappointing. Too many beach balls, I feel like, would be a problem. One feels
not
like
one.
A fun high school, you know, graduation
but
situation.
But it's good for a music show because it's sort of like it. But it would enhance, but I feel like it would take away from
I like
the
to imagine
show.
With the comedy people, the comedy nerds are so into it that they will wait until the punchline and then boom it.
Right. The comics
presumably
like,
making some kind of Andrew Dice
Clay noise.
Get that
goddamn
noise.
Ball.
Just, oh!
Yeah, beach ball's really typically not for comedy.
But one bouncing fun off of like Dave Attell's head, that's going to be, you know, that's a beautiful moment.
I do think it would be really fun, though, that if you had a joke that bombed, someone would just drop a medicine ball on the ground. So you could just hear a thud if something didn't play.
That's the pro league of hecklers.
That's right. Also, Kyle, we have to ask our listeners for a very low impact special.
Are you finally going to ask them to send me $5?
You can't do that.
Oh,
Soupy Sailor.
We can do that.
No.
It's the freedom of the format.
Don't send Kyle one dime. Don't send the podcast any money. Don't send Kyle any money. Just keep listening to it. That's fine if you listen to the podcast. But we would like you to fill out a survey for us to gain information, because we have sponsors on the show, but we just want to make sure that sponsors are that they are relevant to your interests. Because I think, you know, I was always kind of dicey about should we have sponsors, but then at a certain point we were like, well, it's expensive to give away free content.
Well, you kept getting chased by that company that was selling football polish.
Yeah, and nobody wants football polish. So we just want to make sure that you guys are cool with the types of sponsors that, because a good sponsorship would actually tell you about something you would want to know. So in addition to supporting the thing that you get for free, it also, you might learn about things that you would be interested in.
Ooh,
so,
relevant to my interests.
Quick little survey, takes a couple minutes, it's completely anonymous. Go to this episode's page at Nerdist.com and click on the survey link and fill it out. If you wouldn't mind, we'd appreciate it.
And then celebrate by sending me $5.
And don't do that. And if you don't want to fill it out, we will continue to go fuck ourselves.
All right.
All right, great. This episode's Jason Biggs, who was great on At Midnight. And I didn't know, I mean, I met Jason years ago. And we've been near each other at events, but never said hi because I just hate bothering people. And he just fit right in. He just slotted right in.
Very much felt like, oh, is he just going to start hanging out now?
He could just start hanging out now. I think he should do a podcast.
He should do that.
He was great. He's Orange is the New Black is on Netflix now. So you can see it whenever you want because that's how Netflix works.
So at 9 o'clock?
It doesn't matter what time it is.
11 o'clock.
No, you don't understand. It's any time you want.
So like 1 o'clock.
God damn it! Yes.
Good.
Jason Biggs is on Twitter. Jason Biggs. I think he's just Jason Biggs on the tweets. And here he is, Nerdist Podcast number 568 with Jason Biggs.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Because I was just like, he said he had, you guys had Jeff Bridges on the other day. I go, did you see the other night he bowled his first pitch?
Oh, yeah,
and he goes, wait a second.
And then I got, he called me this morning. I was having breakfast and he was like, Jeff Bridges bowled the first pitch. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, I told him it's a thing. He was very excited.
It's on. It's all recorded there. And people will hear it. And now I'm never going to not do the podcast like this.
Can you hear him okay like that? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was fine for Jeff Bridges. You know, he is a very projecting magnet.
No, he doesn't. He talks like this, man.
he was really great.
Yeah.
He really, really did.
He bowled it. And it was funny because
I saw it like the day it happened. I'm so bummed that you went all this time without knowing the work that you've done.
I could have had a better birthday weekend. I would have just been fucking fine the whole weekend. Now knowing this, it's like I have another birthday.
I literally was just like, that is so cool. Good for him. You know? Like, because some people are so like... Because I know with, like, the pie thing, you know, it's like you either embrace it or you try, you're so hard to, like, get away from it, and that always looks bad, kind of, in a way.
You're either Jeff Bridges or Jaleel White.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly.
And you're not going to get away from it. They will. I mean, I still get, did you fuck J.D. McCarthy?
Mm-hmm.
15 years after, what is it, 20? Oh, that hurts. decades afterwards. So it's still crazy that... You do have to embrace it because there's no point in getting mad at it. And it's like, it's nice that they...
And he's beloved, and especially for that role, though, he's beloved, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, to go out there, though, and bowl the first pitch is
that
pretty...
The and then afterwards, it's like, everyone crazy. He was like, could everyone keep it down? I'd like to thank Jonah Ray for the suggestion.
He said that. That's so
nice. Oh, you're Jonah Ray.
I'm Jonah Ray.
You're the Jonah Ray. I was who is this lucky Jonah Ray that he keeps talking about? He did a post-game interview on ESPN as well. Did you miss that?
You know, Dodger Stadium next weekend, Jonah Ray Day.
Yeah, Jonah Ray Day.
That's it, bobblehead Jonah Ray.
Everyone puts on scruff and thick glasses.
Everyone's going to think it's Seth Rogen Day, but...
everyone's going to think it's Silver Lake Day.
Yeah, exactly.
And, but it's actually
it's in Echo Park?
Well, fine. Echo Park is it's bleeding over a little bit. Silver Lake is spreading all the way downtown.
That's true. It's bleed.
But Jason Biggs, it's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, man.
We work out at the same gym. And I just never like to bother people at the gym, so I never say hi.
You know, I thought I'd seen you there. Yeah, it's you look good, by the way. Clearly, it's working for you.
Oh, thanks.
It's not working for me.
No, you look great talking about.
I haven't been there in a while.
You look great, Jason. I've already fished.
No, stop it. I don't look that good.
Take your shirt off.
Show me your ass.
Okay.
Yeah. Doesn't everyone want to see him with a shirt off? Everyone wants to see him with a shirt off. Hey!
We're going to see Jason's abs right after these messages.
You got to tease them. Wait, who do you work out with there?
His name's Tom. It's the same guy I've been working out with for 9 years.
Okay.
He used to train out of... He used to have this apartment that had this like loft part that he had basically turned into like his little workout space. And then he moved, and so we started working out at that place. And I like it. It's good.
Not far from your work.
Yeah, it's the same place you... Oh, you didn't...
No, I went to his apartment. He has a smaller apartment now.
Yeah.
And I was going there for a while.
To work out or to just sit and smoke weed?
Just hang out. Eat. I thought if I talked about working out enough with the trainer, it would just
burn
get my
calories.
Body. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It didn't. I had so many foods.
Just some weed curls?
Just weed curls. Like, yeah.
Just like crushing it in the pit of your elbow.
Yeah, that's how I like to get it all.
It's good though. I like it. I go crazy if I don't work out regularly.
It's totally cyclical for me. I'll go and fits and bursts, and then I'll just totally stop. And I have a kid. Do you have kids?
I don't.
Yeah. See, they fuck with you, man.
That's
they
what
fuck,
I heard.
They fucked everything. He fucked everything up.
Right. He took all that time where you didn't have to worry about shit, and now you actually have to worry about a human life.
Yeah. Well, where I have to worry about something other than myself, which sucks.
Ew.
Yeah. It's gross.
What are you doing here?
It's like it's shitty. It's like, it was more like, what time of day would I like to work out? Would I like to sleep in? Would I like to, do I want to do an afternoon workout? Do I want to do two workouts?
Yeah.
Ooh, not, the Pratt.
Yeah. Bad. Yeah, the Pratt. Yeah. The old Pratt.
It's the first time I'd ever heard of that. Looking on Instagram, seeing this guy's body, and be like, two workouts a day, no beer. I was like, no, well, I guess I'll never get that body.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you don't need an 8-pack, though. Like, you're not, you don't have to.
You don't know what I need.
Well, I'm pretty sure you don't need that.
We'll see.
It'd be weird. Listen, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but it'd be so obviously something whatever I'm about to say is not going to be great. But it'd be weird if you had your this kind of like cute scruffy face and then you're just ripped. Like that would be that would be weird.
That was actually one of the reasons I wanted to start working out and getting really in shape. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I was in shape? If I was just this, still the same guy up here, it'd be but good, just ripped.
It'd be really good for my comedy bit.
Yeah,
really. If I was just in sick shape.
Yeah, exactly. But everyone's going to want to laugh at the guy that can beat him up.
Yeah, as soon as you're like, hey guys, check this out, and you lift up your shirt, and it just gets weirdly silent because everyone's uncomfortable, and they don't, they feel threatened all of a sudden.
It's hard for a good-looking guy in comedy.
So so are you happy as a dad now? I mean, did you have that thing that people have, like you said? Well, I don't have to. I get to not focus on myself anymore. Did you actually did a switch flip?
Yeah, it definitely happened, like right away, and it was just this visceral kind of weird overnight thing. But it's a struggle because I, on the one hand, I love, not being selfish, and it's like, oh, this feels good. I'm taking care of something else and I'm not focused on my shit so much. And, and then on the other hand, it's like, whoa, I have been selfish for so fucking long, you know?
It's more just a reminder of how bad you were for someone.
Yeah. And then that's actually depressing, you know?
Really?
Yeah. Cause I was like, oh my God, I really was so caught up in my own world, you know? But it's been a great thing. And I mean, he's awesome. I mean, he's great. He's not sleeping though, which it's amazing how lack of sleep really, just screws you up in every other part of your day is just kind of, it's wacky. My wife and I like are at each other and just like you're kind of in a, you know, I'm stumbling over my words right now.
Cause you and your wife go at each other cause you can't take it out on the kids. So you end up taking
it out. They're just tired.
We're just tired. Yeah. And it's just like,
patience.
No patience. Yeah, just our fuses are so short. No. We take it out on the kid.
No, sure. Look what you did.
To be clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's listen, everything. I mean, everything a new parent sort of says is, you know, you hear it's amazing and it's fucking hard and it's yes and yes. Mm. The thing that I wish I was a little bit more warned about was like, because I was expecting when the kid was born for all of my other of my shit to just sort of evaporate, go away, and I would have kind of tunnel vision and be only focused on the kid and all my other problems would go away. And I realized that that's actually kind of first of all, it's a horrible thing to put on the kid. You know what I mean? Like, fix me. You know, like that's a terribly abusive thing. And it's completely irrational thinking. But for some reason in my head, I always wanted to be a dad. You know, I was really excited about, am really excited about it. So I put such great expectations on it. Also, there's all this other shit that was sort of happening that I was really looking forward to sort of, you know, making go away. And turns out that doesn't happen.
No.
You know, the kid is born. It's amazing. It's the best thing that ever happens. You love this thing more than anything in the world. You don't really know why. But all your other shit is still there. So then I wrestled for like a little while with the guilt of I'm not as I thought I was just going to be only focused on this kid, but I'm still like stressed about this thing or that thing. I'm like, oh fuck, that, why am I doing that? And it's like, then you talk to other people, other new parents, and you go, well, you still have your shit. You just reprioritize where everything is. So
yeah,
it's just a whole, that was a fascinating thing to me where it's like, yeah, but it's settling in. Also for the dad, you know, it takes a while to like make that thing. Like again, yeah. I said immediately, I'm like, I love this thing so much. I want to protect it. I want to take care of it. I want to nurture it. I want to hold it. I want to do all this. But it's just there. Like it's just kind of, it's boring. He's boring.
How old is he now?
He's 6 months.
Oh, so 6 months.
He's smiling and laughing.
So he's getting out of the stage where he's a paperweight, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's basically
just like a thing that you have to keep alive.
Yeah, a paperweight that shits all over the place. Like, and like you got to clean up, like a paperweight.
It's the worst paperweight.
Yeah, it's like your important documents get shit on
all over the papers.
Well, you shouldn't line his cage with all those paperwork.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. No, that is a good, I learned the hard way.
It's one thing about the way that we evolved that I don't understand, like the evolutionary purpose of having this new life essentially drain you. What is the biological purpose of having parents be sleep deprived for 3 years? So that they're less patient and more on edge.
Resentful. Yeah. It's like, what is the point of this? Like, why do, like, you know what? Hate your kid for 3 years and then it's going to be the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why.
And then spend the rest of their lives feeling guilty for those 3 years.
Exactly.
There could be some sort of a hormone or something that floods your new parent's brain where it's like, oh, they only need to sleep 2 hours a night now. And then once the kid's old enough, that recedes and it's like, now I go to my schedule. But it just,
just screws you.
Yeah. Not to say that it's the same thing, but like me and my wife have a dog that got a disease called Cushing's disease, which it makes it think it's hungry nonstop all the time.
Oh, gosh.
So at nighttime, every hour and a half to 2 hours, it would start barking and whining. And so we were just trying to figure out what it was about, but it was a good 2 months of just
up all the time.
Every 2 hours we would have to wake up and like, I would give it like a little bit of food and it would go back to bed. But,
actually that's funny. Usually when it's so many people do that, like, it's not the same thing, but you know, I have a puppy and literally you just, the new parent always just, and I know now just, cause I always used to do that to a new parent. I would be like, well, I have two dogs, so I probably get it. And I know now that they were totally rolling their eyes because I'm rolling my eyes at everyone that says that. But that actually sounds exactly like having a newborn.
Thank you.
I know exactly.
I was kind of really scared.
No. That actually is, this is the first time someone can say, like, do the puppy analogy or the dog analogy without me rolling my eyes, because that's exactly it.
You both
every
wake
2 hours.
You both look at each other. Who's going to get it this time?
Yep.
I have exactly
who's
the same
faking
thing
sleeping?
Because I can't sleep more than 6 hours. And then, like, at 6 hours, I wake up, and then I got to go back to sleep for like another 2 hours.
Oh,
it's exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same.
I wake up and I'm like, oh my god, it's 6:30 in the morning. I just go back to sleep for 2 hours.
Yep.
But I don't
single.
Rolling my eyes, Chris.
Oh man, you'll see one day when you get a puppy.
It's great to be lonely.
Yeah, or a kid. Or
nice not to have Cushing's in the family, isn't it?
Maybe I am hungry every 2 hours. I don't know.
My wife too. She, every time it was like our dog's got Cushing's disease, and she would go, "Peter Cushing's disease."
I said that. I said that under my breath.
Yeah, exactly.
Peter Cushing's disease.
It's real spooky.
It's really, 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 really spooky. Was he the first one to get it when they were shooting Star Wars? Was it like, we have to feed Peter every
2 hours. Every
2 hours,
exactly.
He freaks out. We have to cut the scenes and go through.
That's where craft service was invented, actually. It was on that set. Because of Peter fucking Cushing.
And before it was sarcastic, it's Cushing's disease. It's getting every 2 hours.
No, it's a real thing.
And also, then you have, now you have this sort of luxury problem of having a hit show,
right? Yeah.
Which is good, which I'm sure is amazing, but then also like, but that has a lot of responsibility that goes along with it too.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is, you know, that you have to sort of weigh your priorities between that and your family.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, the show always wins out. The kid knew what he was getting for. And
to be honest, I'd watch that show more faster than I'd watch your kid.
1,000,000%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I know you would. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Give me the choice.
What's your production schedule on this?
Spoiler alert: season three for me is much lighter. So it's actually been great. So the bigger concern right now is that my wife's schedule has gone kind of crazy through the roof, and I've kind of taken the back seat, which has been I've loved it. But she's kind of going bananas right now. So she's like lost her mind, literally.
The book blew up, or
the book blew up, and so she's doing adapting it and doing all that stuff, and which is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So we shoot in New York, but I've been able to be here in LA. So with them, and she's been off like doing press events and all this stuff, and I'll stay back, and so far it's been easier for me to negotiate all of that. I've still had season two publicity obligations, so there has been a little bit of navigating sort of these trips for the show, publicity trips. But for the most part, production schedule has been okay. Last year when Jenny, my wife, was pregnant, there was, a bit of back and forth and, figuring that all out. But so far it's okay. So far,
good.
It's all good.
Well, your wife's super smart and funny, and that must be nice to. Is it like a one-upsmanship in the relationship, or does your humor complement each other?
It is incredibly competitive. Yeah. Although I feel like our comedic sensibilities do go very hand in hand, and we sort of bring out the best in each other, and sometimes the worst, because we maybe push each other a little
sure.
too far.
Sure.
Because the problem, if it's a problem, some people consider it a problem, is that we don't. Our lines are really blurry. We each don't really know where the line is. So when we check in with each other about, whether or not we're going too far, we're really checking in with the wrong person.
Right.
Yeah.
So she'll come to me with a tweet or an idea. She'll be like, do you think this is, I'll be like, no, not at all. I mean, that sounds great. So that's kind of interesting. But she had this, she was doing this interview recently, and someone asked her, how would you define success? And I was expecting her to say something about like maybe the kid, like she just had this baby, family or something, or, something sweet. I mean, it was a total opportunity. And she said, as soon as I have more Twitter followers than Jason, I will consider myself successful. And she's not kidding. She's
competitive. I define success as being able to thrive career wise even when I'm in a damaged relationship. Yeah. What?
What if I'm like, that I get.
Yeah. I'm the same way. That's why this works.
That's why it works. I get it, honey. Yeah.
It's sort of like that episode where I think it was the X-Files episode of The Simpsons where they determine that Mr. Burns will never die because he's in this perfect stasis of every disease that you can possibly have.
Oh, it's the Three Stooges effect, yeah, where so many diseases trying to get through the door. So they all get stuck.
So they're bottlenecked right there.
That's genius.
But it can be, because I've been in relationships before with, because I gravitate toward funny people. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, like, if someone has that thing that you can instantly identify as like, oh, they have it. Would they have that thing?
Yep.
That I love that. And but I have been in relationships in the past where it can be a little competitive, where it's like, where you kind of do a bit together and then you just kind of look at each other like, so who gets to use that?
Yeah. It's funny. That actually does happen. So we'll literally. Like we'll be joking around, or and then some sort of funny idea or tweet, you know, will be born from it. And it's hard to say who really came, you know, maybe she started it and I finished it. I had like the punchline of sorts or vice versa. And then it's kind of like, you know, we do this thing where it's like, are you going to tweet that? Or because I'm going to tweet, you know, or if you don't discuss it, the worst is then I'll like later on in the day, I'll see that she tweeted it and then I'll come home and I'll be like, so you tweeted it, huh? So you went, I mean, that was pretty much my, I mean, like that was mine. Or if I do it, of course, it's the same thing, you know?
It's and, dangerous.
Or I've even seen, or now it's an Instagram thing too. So she'll literally, she'll, if like, say she doesn't have her phone on her, she'll be like, ooh, give me your phone. And she'll take my phone, she'll take a picture of something funny. And then later on in the day, she'll be like, I need your phone. I need to text myself that picture because I'm going to Instagram it. And I'm going to be like, well, it's on my phone. I feel like it's... I feel like...
Squatter's rights.
I feel like it's my Instagram now, you know?
I paid for the equipment. I rented it out to you.
I produced it, basically. Yeah, yeah. I produced that Instagram photo.
Comedy, you know, people who are genetically comedic will have the kinds of... rows that that normal people have about, like, so you texted that guy? It's like, you texted that joke then?
Yeah, totally.
Like,
no, it's totally.
Some joke jealous.
With my wife, too, she's like, we'll both take pictures of something, and then I'll quickly Instagram, and I was like, are you going to Instagram yours? She's like, why? Everyone that follows me already follows you.
Exactly. Like, yes. Yeah,
she's like, I don't want to clog up someone's feed by just tailing on yours. I'm like,
or how about this? Have you done this? Have you so we'll like, or we'll both see something out in the world, and we'll be like, that's funny. And we both get our phones out. We both take the picture, and then we're like, well, it's both of ours, and we'll both go to Instagram it. But then we're playing the caption contest. Mm-hmm. Whose caption is going to be funnier? You know. So then you go and you post, and you don't want to say it out loud because you don't want. So then you go and post, and then you see. Then it's like, who got more likes?
Well, but the important thing is that in 5 years you'll be able to use your child as the judge.
This is
that's true.
Who was funnier?
Yeah. Daddy, come on, daddy, right? Come on, daddy.
Dad, buy the Xbox.
I'm so hungry. Why won't you feed me?
What are you, Cushing's disease? Shut the fuck up. I just fed you.
You keep on showing me pictures of food, but
yeah, funny pictures. This looks like a dick and balls. It's a banana with two apples. Come on, kid. But it is. It is. I always wonder. I kind of go back and forth between, wait, is it better to date someone who's in the business or out of the business? And it's like there's pros and cons of both. If someone's not in the business, they don't understand why your brain and schedule are so weird.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. And then if someone's in the business, there's built-in inherent competitiveness, even whether it's healthy or not. It's there. That becomes a thing. And then... then your crazy brain and schedule is times two, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a tricky thing. And, you know, I played the game like, you know, oh, I'm never going to date an actress. You know, I did that for a minute after I dated crazy actresses. And then, you know, I married a crazy actress and, you know, it's whoever the person
now
is.
Now she's a crazy writer.
But now she's a crazy writer, which is actually fantastic. Yeah. You know, that actually is a little bit, that does make things a little bit better. But
it's still creative. It's two creatives being together. And a creative is kind of a volatile personality at times. I always say it's like that desktop, the ball thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like sometimes it's like, you know, they're all swinging one way. And that's like in the time where someone's being like, I'm a piece of shit. I'm never going to do anything. And the other person's going, no, right behind him. You're good. You're great. You're great. Everything's going to be awesome. But then when you start to be like, oh, I'm a piece of shit. I'm, you know, and then they're there to, but every once in a while, they just go right
that's
into each other.
Example is like, I had a girlfriend who was a comic and, we were so alike in a lot of ways, and so we were able to support each other. But then when we were both being needy, it was just like, but I'm, and she's like, but I'm. And I'm like, I don't, we need a third person.
Yeah, someone says, you're not there for me. Jinx, fuck you.
Jinx, owe me a beer. Yeah. No, that is actually, that's spot on for us, actually. Jenny and I, well, we are each other's biggest fans. We are each other's biggest supporters. And for the most part, it works out where when she's being needy, I'm able to give. And when I'm being needy, she's able to give. But there are times when we're both being needy and it's fucking hard. Yeah. It really is. Like, it's actually legitimately like a tough thing where you have to, it's a real negotiation and you got to kind of figure it out. And it's, yeah, it's hard. And then the resentment can start getting it, festering its way in. And
it's any long-term relationship takes work and maintenance. And you forget about that because, you know, when you have, when you first start and it's like, oh, this new relationship feeling. This is amazing. This is going to be amazing forever.
Won't go away ever.
And then all of a sudden the idealized your matrix superego self starts to drop, and then you just become your kind of normal self. You become your normal self, and then that other person becomes their normal self, and hopefully that does complement each other. But at a certain point, you kind of have to have the same general goals. And how do you? You know, how much work you really do need to maintain your relationship. Yeah. It's sort of like when you're like 20 and you're like, I can eat whatever I want. I can drink whatever I want and I'll be fine. And then when you're like 30, 35, you're like, oh yeah, you can't do that. Yeah. You really do have to.
It's a great analogy.
The older you get, the more maintenance you have to do just to feel normal.
Yeah.
So it's
tricky. Yeah. And, we go to couples therapy as often as we can. I mean, and we get the most out of it. When things are good, you know, I think a lot of people view it we're having a fight. We need to go and fix it. It's more like a problem solving type of thing, a Band-Aid, a one off, or, you know, or go when things are kind of crazy. And then once things get better, you can kind of take a break and,
That's all right.
But we go as often as we can, and we find that we get the most out of it when things are good, because we'll literally be like, are we really going to couples therapy today? We're going to spend all this fucking money. And it's like, but we're great and everything is awesome. Yeah. And we make sure we go, and we end up you're more open to listening, to communicating, you know, like you could hear, and you find yourself, and we happen to have a great therapist who will, you know, engage a conversation in a way that you end up, you know, finding there's always issues. There's always you can talk about. So you just have a little bit more, you're a little bit more open-minded, you know, as opposed to going in and being like, we have to talk about that thing that she said the other night. Yeah. She called me this, you know, and it's like, that's bullshit. Then you're just trying to put out a fire.
Well, it's really just a way to force you into just open communication on the reg.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Because that's the main thing. It's don't let it stew. Don't let it just sit there. You have to be like, hey, when you said this, it kind of, you know, you have to do it as soon as you can.
Anyway, most people could use better communication skills.
In general.
In general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so anything that you do that helps you do that, I think is good. And it also, you know, the more time you spend working on that, the more of those deposits you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I mean, even though you may not realize it because in general you're doing better than you would have normally, it really does have an effect every time you go in. Every time you ignore it, I mean, I've been in relationships where you just kind of ignore it, you know, and you just sort of grow apart. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, that person's way over there.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we're going to get back. Yeah. And then, you know, then the relationship ends because you just weren't paying attention. It just takes work and focus. And like you said, you know, we do what we do. The thing that makes us good at what we do also makes us difficult people sometimes, which is that we have to, that we're very internal.
We internalize everything.
And personalize everything.
Yeah.
And we're very hypersensitive to the world, because as a performer, that's part of your skill set is absorbing what's around you. And so it is very important to learn.
And reacting. Jenny and I both are incredibly reactive people. So, and we're codependent. I mean, everyone, I think, in a relationship to some degree becomes codependent, but we happen to be particularly codependent. And, you know, so we're always like reacting and personalizing everything. And it's just, you really, it's fucking hard, man.
Yeah.
But, do it for the kid.
Also, it's sort of like what Jeff.
Do it for yourself. And it will trickle down.
That's it.
Yeah. What Jeff Bridges was saying in that podcast was, he was talking about, like, he was like, yeah, man, it's tough. But ultimately, you know, the longer you're in it, that thing that you get closer to is that really, that level of intimacy that you cannot have, you know, that you just can't have with anyone else, which to me sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Cause you know, the idea of intimacy means something a lot different when you're younger. And then when you start to get older, you know, I don't know. It just seems like having someone who really truly is your kind of a molecular companion.
Yeah.
Feels like it seems like it's, yeah. It sounds nice.
It's something to the effect of like, you know, I know, you know, the longer I'm together with my wife, like I know when she says a certain thing, it's like, okay, I think it's time to go get food. Cause she wouldn't have said that thing if she wasn't getting hungry or like, you know, you start to notice little things like that where it's like
when she says like, I need to get fucking food right now. Like
and it's already, yeah, it's already to way too you. Late.
Yeah.
It's already too late. Yeah. By the time my wife says she's hungry, I'm like, well, it's already too late. It's going to be kind of a shitty time until we get some food.
You got to be careful. You got to be careful of though is not trying to read too much subtext into things.
Cause what's that supposed to mean?
Well, yeah, see, again, this is your problem with Deanna, is that you're doing just that.
You think we're going to divorce?
Well, no, it's not that. I do think she's going
to
leave you.
Did she talk to you about this?
Well, no, she's talked to a lot of people.
What's
about
his name?
It.
I just need to know his fucking name.
His name's Jason. May or may not be in this room.
What?
No, there could be other Jasons in here.
Jason!
Oh, no!
Oh, wait.
That's Kyle.
That's Kyle?
Well, his middle name is Jason.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the idea is that I think it's very important in a relationship to develop a type of communication. And it's hard to do when you know someone for so long and you have these shorthands. But I think it's important to take people at their word, like take things at face value so that you don't get into a lot of like, what the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, well, it just means what I said it means.
Well, and it's like it's a choice you can make. You can choose to take it at face value and. What happens is it's just a lot less energy. Every instinct tells me to read into things, wonder why they said that, to parse it until I'm blue in the face.
Take it personally,
and oh my God, why? And it's like, you know what? Fuck it. If I could choose not to, and it's like so much less energy, and I'm so much happier. It's just, you know, it's just really hard.
Well, that's a byproduct too. That's a byproduct of me being selfish sometimes, or self-centered, or, you know, so like being an only child is like, you know, if you say something and then I take it super personal, like, why would you do that to me? It's like, well, that person maybe really wasn't doing that to you.
Yeah.
They were doing something that they wanted to do, and then you just took it that way. Yeah. Like, I don't have to take things that
way. It's like the kind of person that where if you're driving and you hear someone honk their horn, you think it's about you.
Right.
Like, it's like, I always notice those types of people where it's like they're driving, they hear, and they're like, what the fuck? What'd I do? It's like, it's
no,
not
that was for five cars ahead of you.
Hundreds of cars around here.
I was lobbing that horn to the front of the line. Yeah. It's too bad there's not a horn that actually sounds like it's lobbing, where it's like,
like, just so you can horn bomb people.
Yeah, you can horn bomb people. Yeah, like, you would know that was the car in front that didn't go.
You can aim. You can pick out. Like, there's little icons on your dashboard, like SUV, bus.
Yeah. You know what, though? There are, you know, the military does have, like, focused sound weapons.
Is the kind of make you shit your pants?
Yes.
So, those kind of like the sound waves that they make people.
I saw Zero Dark Thirty. I think I know big speakers that blast heavy metal.
Yeah, they play like bass tapes from the Miami sound wave.
We need it was Miami Sound Machine.
Sorry,
starring Gloria Stefan. But it was if you could just focus your horn at one car and then no one else could hear it.
Yeah,
like that one, and then you would then that person would know that you were upset.
Yeah,
and it would cut down on noise pollution.
And then if you could start customizing what the horn sounds like you could be your own voice.
Yeah,
you know, you'd be like fuckface.
Yeah, and if you could you don't even have to be in your car. You could just like get your voice to someone else by like a thing in your hand, and you can like press a code that gets your voice to wherever they're at.
Yeah, it's like cupcaking a fart.
Yeah,
it's like if you could throw a fart further than. Yeah. If you could do
okay, so building off your idea from the military thing, it'd be great if you could just push a button and make someone shit their pants.
Yes, that's true. Also, I was just making a joke about phones. I was like, we were inventing phones right there.
Why not?
If only you could contact somebody just whenever they want.
This is how ideas are born, man.
Yeah,
this is how shit happens.
So, what does the rest of your year consist of when you're not? Is it? Are you just focused on the kid now, or are you working on others?
I think I'm going to do a play in New York. I think that's going to be the next move. Which I'm stoked on. It's not official. I don't even know. Whatever.
Well, just tell us the name and when it starts, and then
who else
role
is in it?
Then your opening monologue.
How much I'm getting paid? Yeah. And all that stuff. Not a lot.
Social Security number.
Yeah. Fed ID number. Corporation name. But I've been itching to get back on the stage for a long time. It's been a hot minute.
Is it a comedy?
It is a comedy drama kind of thing. Yeah. It's the Heidi Chronicles. Do you know the Heidi Chronicles?
No.
Great.
I'm so sorry.
No, Wendy Wasserstein. It won the Pulitzer in 89.
Oh, yeah, I know Wendy Wasserstein.
Won in 89. It's an amazing play, and you know, now that I say this, it's all going to fall apart, of course. but no, it's that's what I'm hoping to do next. So that'll be in New York, obviously, and then, you know, hopefully we can get a nice little run out of that. But that's probably going to be like late fall. So it's kind of perfect because while Jenny's off, you know, pitching and doing her Hollywood thing, I can kind of chill and then hopefully she'll land somewhere and kind of sort out what's happening with that. And then we can go to New York. She can write there and I can do the play and we can, it's just, again, you know, negotiating with another creative. It's like, and especially when there's location issues involved, it's like, well, where are we going to be? And with the kid and everything. And obviously it's much easier when the kid is in diapers and not going to school. I mean, that's a whole nother thing that, and people are like, you should start thinking about school. I'm like, fuck you, man. Like, what the fuck is it? I barely know how to change a fucking diaper. And you're telling me to like start thinking about school. But I kind of get like 6 months went like that. Fucking, I was like, wait a second, he was born 6 months ago, and you go, Jesus Christ.
He's going to look like a person before you know it, like that'll flip you out.
Yeah, totally. No, but everything he's doing, even, you know, just everything flips you out, you know? He rolled over the other day, he ate real food the other day, so he made a real shit the other day. Like, whoa. You know, just all this stuff. It's like, it's crazy, but it's exciting and fun. So anyway, I digress. Yeah. I think we'll find ourselves in New York for like the winter, which will be fun.
Will that lead into the next season of Orange is the New Black?
Potentially. So season three is about halfway done right now. And yeah, we'll see. It's funny because Larry, my character, you know, it's just as time goes on, it'll either get harder and harder to find room for him, or it eventually could become much easier, depending on where they go with the show. If they could take the show. And this is all, by the way, this is not, I have no insight info. I literally have nothing. This is just me postulating. But, I mean, they could do, in theory, Herp after getting out of prison.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, the real Larry and Piper are together. But I don't even know. I mean, right now I feel like if my Twitter and Instagram feeds are any indication, which is to say that every other comment says, fuck you, Larry. I'm pretty sure that, you know, they'll focus more on the prison right now, unless on the Larry stuff. It's just getting harder to sort of keep that storyline alive.
No, I mean, if you want to pitch this on my behalf, I say Larry starts committing crimes in drag. And then it becomes like a Bosom Buddies comedy gets put in jail to try to...
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love that idea. I also have an idea, which is that he goes and trains to become CO, a corrections officer, right? Yeah. And then hops on in there, maybe fucks one of the inmates that's not Piper, you know? Maybe, you know, who knows?
That's good.
There's really lots of possibilities.
Grows a mustache.
grows a mustache, you know, maybe loses a leg.
Just because of amalgamation of all
you know, the like just all the characters, yeah. He's just every prison guard in there.
And then what you determine is that the whole show is not about the prison, but it's about like Larry's disintegrating mental state. Yeah. That it becomes like the single white female type of a thing.
And actually, the whole thing has been in his head. He's just been totally fucking warped. Yeah. Like Larry has made all this shit up. He's so fucking. He's been in a mental institution the entire,
entire time. Yeah.
And the doctor is actually Piper.
Piper's the doctor.
Oh, shit.
Oh, that's great.
It seems like it's always so hard to end a series where we were talking, Matt Weiner was on the podcast last night. We were talking about Mad Men and just like the end of like, how do you end a show like that? Or like how Vince Gilligan ended Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to end a show because a lot of times you know, like all these storylines are constructed throughout the life of the show and it sort of takes on its own persona. And then it's like, well, how do you wrap all that up? And I think it should start being acceptable. Just have one like crazy fucking episode where all of a sudden like part of Piper's face falls off and she's a robot the entire time. Like, just didn't know. Like just one totally fucking weird totally. And then it just ends. And we're like, what the fuck did I do? Because it completely changes the entire experience for them. Why not, dude?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're done, you're done. Like, you know, just fucking wrap it up in a... Nope.
And this is why you and I are not more successful writers. This is why...
Fuck, I knew there
this
was
This is why I'm barely clinging to a part on Orange is the New Black and why you're doing a fucking podcast.
I was really worried that it was because I just was a bad storyteller. But it's just because of the ending thing. So I feel really good about knowing that. No, it's... yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. But you know what? The thing that I feel like there was an interview once where someone was being interviewed about something, and I think my friend Rob Paulson was sitting next to you, and he was like, oh, Chris, congratulations on this thing. And the camera went to you, and you go, I don't give a fuck. And it's so fucking funny to me. there's just this idea that...
I remember that.
That you liked it, that, you know, like, I feel like part of what makes you tick is just saying something like so
totally
against
random.
The moment. Yeah.
No, you're the 1,000,000%. And that's why I love your Piper's face falling off idea. I mean, no, that is the kind of shit that's actually a great way to put it. It is what makes me tick. Like I literally like, that's the kind of stuff that I like totally live for. Like I love that shit because it's so and also I feel like it works for me and works against me that people have a built-in perception of me, and so I've been able to play with that, especially on Twitter, you know, because people just don't expect me to say some of the things that I'll say, and so it's great, you know, in some senses, it's been really a lot of fun. It's just, you know, listen, it's, and I also think it's just, you know, for a long time, Twitter for me was this like kind of, and you know, little experiment and a way for me to sort of channel, this other sort of, you know, darker side of my humor. And like I said, to play with this idea that because I've been so known for, well, one role in particular, you know. But in general, I feel like there's been a sort of perception about the kind of person I am. And that has actually kind of, in the last few years, started to drive me a little crazy because I know that I have, you know, I'm more complicated. Like, you know what I mean? We all are. We're all, you know, but when people, you know, are just have this idea of who you are, it starts to fuck with your mind a little bit. And so Twitter became this like little godsend for me where I could, you know, make these jokes and say these things where people would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Why would he say, you know, and then laugh and then people, and then I started to accumulate a following of people who got it and understood it and looked for that in me, and it became sort of a thing, and I really enjoyed it, and I sort of cultivated it, and you know, if you ask anybody or you know, in my world, I mean, it's a side of me, it's part of my sense of humor, but it's not everything is tongue in cheek. I mean, there's
it's not serious.
And it's never malicious. There's nothing malicious.
It's gallows humor.
It's gallows humor.
Like, hey, you know, it's the kind of stuff that Gilbert Gottfried gets in trouble for all the time. It's just like saying, you know, just saying the thing to try to release the tension, but it's actually people are just still feeling too freshly hurt by it, so they just can't, you know. And so it can be challenging to sort of figure out like what's, you know, like what's human about it, but then there's a lot of places where it can bum people out. And so I think it's important for me to talk about it, and I enjoy kind of dealing with it in this way. And you know, I mean, if we didn't have humor, and that's the problem, is that, you know, humor just has teeth to it, And sometimes those teeth bite more sensitive areas than other areas.
Yeah.
And so it can, but you know, to the comic brain, it's like, well, I'm kind of going after everything. And sometimes when you get into a rhythm of it, it's like when you're wrestling with someone, it's like, hey, we're having fun. Ow, 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 fuck,
yeah.
You hurt
me.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was just, you know, I was just playing.
Yeah,
and it's just fucking around. I was just fucking around. I'm sorry.
I thought you, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought we were, so it's never intentional, but you know, I understand the drive to try to gain some sort of a control or understanding over something by like throwing a dumb joke at it.
Totally.
That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
But I do. I want to ask you. So you said like going on Twitter and showing everybody that side of your personality, that you're not this, you know, like kind of squeaky clean, mm-hmm. you know, like dorky guy. Like you're more this kind of like, you know, dark sense of humor actor. Like, has that worked? Like, has that been a thing? Like showing people your personality, how it is in real life. Has it helped with you know, roles or offers or any kind of stuff like that? Like, has it gone the way you expected?
It has, insofar as it's been a good cathartic experience for me, and I feel like I've, as an outlet, it's been great, and so it's helped me, and I feel like everything that I'm doing now as a result has, you know, I feel like it's been helpful, but I don't feel like people, you know, who, you know, I don't feel like I've been hired as a result of that. You know, I don't feel like there is a direct connection between what I tweet and me getting jobs at all. And
yeah.
I don't know that I expected that necessarily. I mean, frankly, I don't know what exactly I expected. Although I do feel like it has, it's gotten me a little like, I guess you know where I get off and people coming up to me and they'll be like, you know, like, hey, you know, I'm a fan, you know, I like your show, and dude, your Twitter feed is awesome. Like that to me, like, it gives me a hard on. I'm like, oh, that's fucking great.
Because that's your thing.
Because
it's
that's
your
so
thing.
Personal. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, cool. And that, because I know then that person kind of knows a side to me that's not in Orange is the New Black, or that's not in these characters that I'm playing.
Yeah, that's what, when I saw, like, a few years ago in Montreal, I saw Steven Weber, who I always enjoyed as an actor, but then, you know, following Steven Weber on Twitter, I was like, this guy is fucking fucked up and hilarious and funny.
Yeah.
And I went up to him. I was like, you are so funny.
Right.
And he was like, oh, wow. And we ended up like hanging out all night.
Yeah.
But it was just, it is a thing. But like, I know that there's now this awareness, like there's a whole bunch of like people, like comedy people that know him and like know he could pull off a certain sensibility now. And I think the same thing will end up, I think you'll start to see that more.
And
as
I think,
you go along.
And I think I have in the comedy world, I feel like there's a sort of, respect, I guess, and appreciation amongst, because the people that I really am, like, you just look at who I follow on Twitter. I mean, it's comedy people and people who, you know, I think are really funny, and I feel like I get, it's requited in a way that makes me feel really good. And so, you know, to be sort of, you know, or I'll see someone's Follow Friday and it'll be with you and, you know, people that I'm like really like, oh, cool, Jenny Johnson and Danny Zucker and all these like funny people. And it's like, oh, right on, you know. But at the end of the day, I think the whole thing, you know, I wouldn't say it's backfired, but I do need to be careful because at a certain point, If I were to keep this thing, whatever it was or is, up, in meaning if I continue to tweet without thinking, for lack of a better sort of term, it'll do more damage,
of course,
than it'll help. I mean,
no one joke is worth that.
And no one joke is worth that. And my wife had a great point, which is like, you know, I mentioned a lot of comedians, comics who say things, who don't hold back, and who I just love and respect, and you know, and like, because I don't want to mention names now, but like, you know, like, and I go, but babe, they can do it, and that's who I love, and the whole thing. And she'll go, and she said, well, is that the career that you want? And not that they have don't have great careers, but it isn't the career that I want.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it is this weird thing where like it's almost an existential crisis of sorts where I'm like, I want to be that comic that can say whatever the fuck and get in trouble and doesn't care and doesn't hold back. But at the same time, I'm like trying to be an actor that's like taken seriously to some degree and is like hireable by big companies like Netflix. They're not going to continue to hire you if you're in the Daily Mail every other day because of some asshole tweet.
Well, the other thing too that a lot of comics have that non-comics don't have is that. And first of all, comics actually still do get in trouble for stuff, but I think with a comedian, there's more context that supports where it's coming from.
Right.
So, you know, like someone like, you know, Louis will get away with saying stuff on stage because there are, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of context that he's built around this character that he is.
Yep.
Or like South Park is another example where it's like they've sort of established what their voice is. And so people, it's not so out of left field. People are like, they just seem to be a little more forgiving. It was like, oh yeah, well that's his thing and he's safe because of it. I mean, it still does. I mean, there are still people who are offended by it, but it doesn't really make news because it's not so out of left field. So a non-comedian just doesn't, you know, in your brain, you have all the context, but other people do not.
And that's where, to me, the whole experience has really highlighted a lot of like, hypocrisies for me that I can sit here and be enraged till I'm blue in the face, but it's like, you know, it is. Unfortunately, those are the rules. No one has the context on me. It's like, I've always been this way, you guys. I've always made jokes like this. But, well, no. According to, you know, Johnny Public, I haven't. You know, I've been the dude that stuck my dick in a pie, but I've been basically, your next-door neighbor type underdog,
Here's a good, and I think this might be the third name I've dropped in this podcast, but when we were, when we had Mel Brooks on the podcast, we were talking about comedy and, like, what is comedy supposed to be? And ultimately, and I actually learned a lot from this, and it changed the way that I write in this one sentence, but he said, comedy should be about subverting power. Comedy is subverting power. And so what upsets people is if you're trying to subvert someone who's in a weakened position.
Yes.
Because that person's already down, so why kick them when they're down? It just makes you look like a schoolyard bully.
Yeah.
So if you can refocus that to, you know, either people who are in power, people who really deserve it, then you know you have that mechanism, but it's just, I think you're going to find that it's going to go a lot smoother.
It's a great.
Yeah, and it changed the way I write and just my approach to, so don't make fun of that. You know, like try to shift that energy over to this or make it about myself. Like, I shit on myself all I want, you know?
Yeah.
No one can say anything about that. So that's maybe, I feel like that's a good rule.
That is actually a great rule of thumb.
Yeah.
That actually is really good. And it's true. I mean, people are going to connect with you in a, everyone wants to bring down the big, bad, powerful guy, you know? It's like, Yeah, you're going to have a harder time finding supporters when you're going after someone that's already down. It's very true.
That being said, if your baby doesn't start cooperating, you should just leave it in Los Angeles while you and your wife spend a nice winter in New
York.
You're
absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Someone will watch him. How long do you have? Do you know what the rule is in California? How long where you could drop them off at a church or fire station?
Without
any questions asked, like in a bassinet?
I think you might still be in the
zone.
Be in the green zone.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. I think you might still be in a bassinet.
Yeah, my parents tried that when I was 14. It's real weird.
It's a really big bassinet.
Yeah, it was huge. Like a little apartment. I was just as confused as the fireman.
So what? That's it, man. We're at an hour. That just flew by.
Shit,
that was fun.
Cool.
It's so
nice. It's been really nice to have you on. And again, I'm sorry. You know, like I always wanted to say hi at the gym, but I always just feel weird talking to me because you just never know, like what. You know, because when people are working out sometimes, they're kind of in their own.
Oh, I'm always looking for a reason to, like, not work out. So please, like, talk to me. Let's shoot the shit.
Or just spot him. Spot him one day.
Yeah, or spot me.
See that when he's crunching his chest lats? and then just
his chest lats.
Spot him.
My chest lats.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few people that actually has chest lats.
It's an issue.
It's yeah.
I don't think I should spot anyone. Actor Jason Biggs crushed by bench press today as weaker actor comedian tries to spot.
I tried.
Yeah.
I thought I could do it.
But you're going to be on At Midnight pretty soon, right?
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. That's awesome. You're going to have fun.
I'm really nervous.
Fun. You don't need to be nervous. It's totally fun.
It's a blast.
It is because the show's not real. It's not like aggressively competitive.
Right.
And the show is designed
to make everyone
have fun.
Look good.
Like my approach to the show and the way that we developed it was that I think comedians are funnier when they're comfortable and having a good time, as opposed to like, oh, I gotta tear everything down.
Yeah.
So like, the more fun you have and the more you kind of fuck around with everyone and the more you know, the questions are there obviously for jokes, but they're just designed as jumping off points for riffing and fucking around. So yeah, I think you'll do great and it'll be fun. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. No, thrilled. Anything specifically do you want to promote Orange is the New Black, or do you want to promote,
the baby?
Baby
ratings are low.
Yeah, the baby's ratings do need a little uptick, or else the baby is on the verge of cancellation. It's on the bubble. The baby is on the bubble. Not in the bubble. Not to be mistaken with the boy in the bubble.
The baby is
on the bubble.
That's got at least 18 years of being on the bubble.
Yeah, he's on the cancellation bubble.
Yeah.
No, you know, listen, Orange is the New Black is a machine at this point. It's like I'm still like kind of finishing up press for season two, and I'm just like, every time a new thing comes in, I'm like, really? Like,
still?
I'm like, I'm psyched because I want to do it for me, but I'm like, really? Like, Orange doesn't need any press, but I'm like, fuck them.
It would still be on, if it was a weekly show, it'd still be on the air right now, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Yeah.
No, it would be because I think it came out in June and in 13 weeks. Yeah, it'd still be on, man.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think, you know.
Yeah.
But that's also why the press has sort of continued through the summer, because they want people to still sort of find it or revisit it et cetera. Because there's real, the premiere date isn't, because you don't have to premiere to a certain number.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just kind of, but Orange is the New Black. I mean, my wife's book. If she knew that you gave me an opportunity to plug something and I didn't mention, I Like You Just the Way I Am, Stories About Me and Some Other People, Jenny Mullen, at bookstores now. She'll be at Book Soup. Well, I don't know when this is
going
to air.
When's this going up, Katie? I think it's going up soon.
I hope you enjoyed her at Book Soup.
I heard she was great.
She was really wonderful.
Yeah. Knocked it out
very
of the park.
Very funny. Knocked
I
it out of the park.
In,
thanks, everyone, for show. It was sold out.
They closed
out.
Book Soup afterwards. Yeah. They're like, well, this is
Sunset
it, guys.
Sunset was backed up all
totally.
The way to, like, into Brentwood.
Yeah. I had to go to Book Soup, which is just
actually,
porn magazines.
Her book signing caused a sinkhole on Sunset Boulevard. I don't know
that's
if you heard about
that.
That
everyone fell
crazy.
Into creating a literal Book Soup. and then back the owner back in the back of the store was like, the prophecy! It's come true! And it's just all,
I
these,
knew it!
All these drawings, these crazy cave drawings of like this giant hole with all these.
We all fall into infinite jest!
My heart.
Mm. The NPR crowd's going to love that joke.
Love it.
You've been listening to Jason Biggs here on the Nerdist podcast here on National Public Radio.
And make your name sound really weird and just very odd.
My name is Gonar Vinequinitz.
Gonar.
I am Gonar. My mother was Jewish.
I don't want to say this podcast came to a screeching halt.
Here, you know what? This is a fun NPR game. So I'm gonna wrap up the podcast with the NPR voice, and so you be a light music bed in the background. But every time I pause for a second, you get louder with the music,
and then
when I start talking again, you like bring the music back down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, it feels like they're just like riding the pod every time.
They don't have enough like it was not bandwidth, but like it's like every time there's only so much space audibly. Yeah.
And then so when I finish and I say like enjoy a burrito, then like just get like progressively annoyed. Louder at the end,
it's
like that's
putting a lot on me, Chris.
No,
I don't know
fine.
If I can deliver.
I know exactly.
Can I just bring up something on my phone to play?
No, just do it. Okay, you ready? And also, you know, I want to micromanage you, but have it be something from like a brass section. Are you
Got
putting
it.
Fucking sunglasses on?
Yeah, because I'm about to play some jazz.
Okay. Okay. You don't have to hold the microphone like a weird instrument.
Okay.
Don't mess with my process.
You've been listening to the Nerdist Podcast. Jason Biggs has been here. We've been talking
I ran out
about
of breath.
Oh, God damn it.
How does Kenny G do it?
Why don't you fucking... Because he has an actual instrument. And talent to play that instrument. You didn't even commit. You did it for like 3 seconds, and then you just bailed. Take the glasses off. The character work is done.
Fuck this. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm sorry, Jason.
Love it.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.